Welcome to High Level Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Padres, Rockies. Padres on another little bit of a winning streak, just coming off sweeping the Pirates. What are there, 40 games left in the season? Ryan, where would you like to start?
I'd like to start with the season sweep of the Pirates. It's hard to beat a team every time you play them. And even a team like the Pirates, which frankly looked a little bit like a playoff contender at the deadline, but been just brutal afterwards. Is this just a case of good matchups? Is this a case of the Padres catching the Pirates at the right time? The Pirates catching the Padres at the wrong time? What do we think?
Yeah, how about a little bit of all of it? And to your point about how difficult it is, you know, the Padres have swept the Nationals and the Pirates this year. This is the first time in Padres history that they have swept two season series of at least six games. Like, wow. Obviously, the Padres have had kind of a, you know, haven't had a great history, right? But it speaks to that in, what are we at, 56 years now? This is the first time that they have done that to anyone, because they played other bad teams as well. And guess what? Last year, they were 1-5 against the Pirates. They were 3-3 against the Nationals. And those teams were worse than they are this year. So, like, it speaks to a lot of things. I think you could even – I've talked to players about this. You look at those National Series, you look at the losing 2 or 3 to the Royals, you look at losing 5 of 6 to the Pirates. That's a huge difference in last season, and it's something that you and I have talked about. I've written a lot about taking care of teams like this is just so important for a winning team. And that's what this is. They missed the Pirates' top two starters both times. I don't know that it would have made a difference, because the Pirates were intent on, and I say that, you know, tongue in cheek, giving these games away in every game. Now, a couple of them the Padres won by large margins, but in every game, and the others were 1 or 2 runs, the Pirates committed it, maybe an error, maybe it was just a miscue. A mental error, a throw to the wrong base, a dive for a ball that you shouldn't have dived for. The Pirates helped the Padres. Now, here's the thing, and I can't remember. I've talked about it elsewhere, written about it, but this reminds me of when the Padres were the 2024 Pirates, and they were playing better teams, and they could come out of it going, dang it, we were so close, but they made too many mistakes, and they just weren't good enough. And a good team beat them. And that's what the Padres are doing to teams like the Pirates now.
Sure. I remember, I mean, there was a time when the Padres had a chance on a night the two guys were pitching, and then everything else was just a crapshoot, right? And the Padres have not only that ability, I mean, look, they don't have anybody like Paul Skenes. They just don't. But they have depth and length, both in their rotation, now in their bullpen, and even a little bit with their position players. Sometimes that's the difference. Sometimes having a Tyler Wade available when the other guys doesn't, sometimes that helps. Sometimes having two closers in your bullpen, in fact, oftentimes, having two closers in your bullpen, one lefty, one righty, can be the difference between blowing a lead and not, right?
Yeah, the Padres are obviously much better equipped than the Pirates at this point, and much better equipped than a lot of teams at this point. You could argue they're much better equipped to close out games than the Dodgers. You could argue they're a more complete team than the Dodgers. Now, they don't have Shohei Ohtani, Freddie Freeman, Mookie Betts, Will Smith, but they, you know, Will Smith is struggling, but they have a better team. You talk about Tyler Wade, David Peralta, Donovan Solano. I mean, you got struggling Padres who are contributing, Ha-Sung Kim, Jake Cronenworth. So this is much, much deeper team relative to most other teams in the majors and relative to other AJ Preller teams. Heck, relative to most Padres teams in history.
Sure. And I had the thought while watching the Padres play the Pirates. It was amazing to me that the Pirates considered themselves contenders and yet traded Martin Perez. This is a guy who, in his starts with the Padres, has been really good. A couple times I thought, like, man, they, like, gave this guy away. Like, was that just a salary dump? I mean, we're looking at his numbers here. He's 1-0, 21 strikeouts, 3 walks, ERA under 2 in 18 and a third innings as a Padre. That's pretty good stuff.
Let's be clear that I don't think the Pirates consider themselves contenders. Now, the players did, manager did, coaching staff, fans, the people trying to build that team and thinking about the young pitching that they have, the young players that they have, and as you mentioned, the salary, Martin Perez. They did not consider this themselves. This is a little bit like how Padres players were upset in 2019 that Franmil Reyes was traded and that they didn't do anything to add players. AJ Preller, his staff, Ron Fowler, Peter Seidler, they did not consider themselves contenders that year, and in my opinion, rightfully so. You could argue that the Pirates, had they kept Martin Perez and had he, you know, and he had started some, I wrote about this the other day in the newsletter, he had started some adjustments. I'll get to some mechanical adjustments in a few days when I write about him, but pitch usage as well, that if he were going to be this guy for them, and they were going to be healthy and Skeens was going to continue out the rest of the season, which we still don't know, right? Rookie of the year race might be a default if Jackson Merrill keeps playing like he is and Paul Skeens is shut down because he's a rookie pitcher. I mean, but you just know, you can just tell by how they treated the trade deadline that they were like, okay, we'll get Isaiah Kiner-Falefa and Brian De La Cruz, but not really contenders. So good for the Padres. They got Martin Perez at the right time, and he is clearly energized by being on this team. And he has been a winner before. He's been an all-star before. He knows what it takes, and he recognizes, hey, look where I'm at. I got another chance.
Right. He was an all-star 2 years ago. I mean, he wasn't an all-star in 2006. You know, this is a guy who is, he was somebody, for lack of a, you know, for lack of a better phrase, you know, he's a guy. And, you know, I think when they traded for him, Kevin, you and I talked, you know, this guy's job was to get them innings, was to bridge, you know, to get to the point where Musgrove's back and Darvish is back and kind of fill. Musgrove's back and looking good. There was some, I would gauge it as optimistic news about you, Darvish, the other day. I mean, these pieces could be falling into place here.
Yeah, I don't know that it was optimistic news. It was, hey, he's working out. I mean, we knew that. It was some specifics about him, but like somebody in the organization said, it's Yu Darvish. He might have wanted to throw batting practice to his son. I mean, that's, Yu Darvish loves baseball, and it has always been that there is a path for Yu Darvish to return. So in terms of optimism, yes, optimism as opposed to pessimism. Optimism as in he could come back. Here's the beauty, and to me, the important thing, they're not dependent on Yu Darvish coming back. Because of Martin Perez, number one, probably, you know, being able to get them those innings and perhaps even be a playoff starter. And because if you're going to go have to play the first round and also then advance, you're going to need four starters, at least for, you know, a good portion there. And so I just think that the real issue here is that they have enough pieces now. And Yu Darvish coming back, wouldn't that be hilarious if the three starters or the three primary starters in the playoffs were the three guys you thought it was going to be at the beginning of the season, Dylan Cease, Joe Musgrove, and Yu Darvish? Because who knows? Michael King, yes, he's one of your guys now. Is he 30 innings from now, one of your guys in the playoffs? Is Matt Waldron, who's been struggling a bit lately, is he? I mean, so – I just think it's really cool that they have, for them, that they have all these options, without a doubt. I thought it was interesting. I don't know if you remember a game against the Dodgers, and it was one of those many moments where you could look back on and you go, man, these guys were just up against it. They weren't going to make it. I forget how many runs it was. I think it was like six runs the Padres scored. Rich Hill was starting.
I remember that. Yes.
And Rich Hill, who they got from the Pirates with a 5-something ERA, who was here to fill some innings, gave up that lead in the next inning. And Martin Perez got a huge lead the other day and threw 5 shutout innings before giving up a solo homer in the 6th.
Well, we talked about it on trade deadline day or on our trade deadline special, Kevin. We needed this guy to be what the Padres thought they were getting out of Rich Hill last year. And he's been that and more. Also, and now I'd like to look ahead and think and talk a little bit about the playoffs here in this next segment of our show. You know, you're going to need a left-hander. You're going to need lefties if you're to go where you want to go in the playoffs. You look at the Dodgers, very left-handed. Freddie Freeman, Shohei Ohtani. You look at the Phillies are very left-handed, right? Kyle Schwarber, Bryce Harper, blah, 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 blah. Like having that extra arm in Martin Perez, even if he's not in your rotation, man, I could see him coming in the 5th or the 6th. I could see him coming in to get a difficult guy out. The Padres are left-handed enough in the bullpen, but having that extra guy who could, and Michael King too as a righty, having somebody who could go down there and help you in a long relief role in a game, I think is invaluable.
I think that you're right. I haven't started to look, obviously, at their playoff matchups yet. Sure. Yes, with the way that they are equipped to work through the playoffs and that Mike Schilt has shown an ability to utilize his bullpen and constructive and creative and kind of even really for today unorthodox. And he does things that maybe other managers say that they're willing to do, but they don't really do very often. Absolutely. And the more pieces, the better. And you know, that going to get Tanner Scott, that was with an eye on having to face the Phillies, having to face the Dodgers in the playoffs. So absolutely.
The Padres are 69-53, season best, 16 games over 500. We're looking at a point now, Kevin, where the playoffs, maybe they're not an inevitability. I don't think that's the case. But man, they are looking very likely here because of what the Padres have been able to do in the last month. You know, if... Where are we looking? Sort of where are they in terms of, are they allowing themselves to think now about playoffs and lining themselves up?
Well, yeah, that absolutely. Though that's the job of Mike Schilt, Ruben Niebla, and the front office and that. The players, I just want to make clear, and you're not saying this, but the players, I mean, have done just a magnificent job of making it about that day's pitcher, that guy, that team they're playing, which sounds easy enough, but man, it can be hard to do. And they have just done a really good job of that. But absolutely. Look, if the Padres and Diamondbacks are going to keep going like this, they're going to have like 120 wins. What would they be? About 104 wins apiece is where they would finish up. But they're not. The Diamondbacks and the Padres are not going to continue to win 9 out of 10 games.
Right.
Is it 89? Is it 90? Well, to get to 89 wins, which would be remarkable if 89 wins was like the last wild card spot, that would be better than either of the first 2 years of this, 16 field. The Padres need to go 20-20. Now, I don't see where that's not likely at this point. Right. The way that they're not only the way they're playing, and I don't necessarily even mean the record. I just mean the way they're consistently playing. Look, they could have played this well and won less Jackson Merrill homer or one less big hit by David Peralta or Luis Arraez, who's been starting to get some, key singles, doubles. One Manny Machado, fantastic play in the 8th, 9th, or 10th inning. And they lose 3 or 4 more games. They're still looking real good. They're in that final wild card spot. Maybe they're tied with the Braves for that final wild card spot. We're thinking, hey, they're looking real good. They'd be playing the same. They've gotten some really good luck, okay? And stepped up big in big moments, but also gotten fortunate. And so have the Diamondbacks, for goodness sake. Like the other day, like Jock Peterson got a little league homer. I mean, like they're getting all these walk-offs too. Look, you could be the 27 Yankees, and if you won 19 out of 22 games, you got some good luck.
Absolutely.
So, yes, that was a way for me to get a whole bunch of little topics into your question. Of course, they are – thinking about maybe not lining up yet because they do have a lot of wins to go to get there, but they're absolutely thinking about what do they look like and what is this scenario? And then what is this scenario? What is the C scenario? And how will we handle that to make sure that we are peaking going into the playoffs? I mean, I haven't talked to anybody about this. They know who they play in the final week of the season, Dodgers, Diamondbacks. Absolutely, you want to get that bye, win the division. But are you going to chase it if you're 3 games back with 6 to go and try to burn people out and then you're not set up for that, what is probably going to end up being a wild card series? No, you're probably not. Have they started to brainstorm that? Yes, it's why AJ Preller, is like a lion who sleeps like 4 hours a day. He's the opposite of a lion. A lion sleeps 20 hours a day. But he's the opposite of that. But they get the same thing done. I tried, Ryan, it didn't work. I tried. But yes, they are game planning.
Sure. And again, the 3-game series with the Rockies starting tonight. After that, the road gets a little bit rougher, right? You've got 3 against Minnesota, 3 against the Mets. The Mets think they're a playoff team. Go to St. Louis for 4, and you play the Rays in Tampa for 3. Then you play Detroit. You get a weird off day, September 2nd or September 3rd. So you play 1 game at Detroit, then you get an off day. Then it's 2 more against Detroit at home, three against the Giants at home. I think we're starting to see some separation. I think the Giants are pretenders, but you know, this isn't Pirates, Marlins, Pirates, right. Rockies, right? Right.
We can talk about each one of those series. Won't get too deep into them. I think the Twins are probably overrated playing the division that they play in. Sure. I think that the Mets, the Cardinals, those are those classic. You mentioned it a couple weeks ago, I think, in relation to the Pirates, who at the time were a few games over 500. Those are where you can ruin those team seasons. You can separate yourself from the Mets and the Cardinals, who are on the outside looking in right now. Or the Cardinals and Mets can get themselves right back there close to you. So, yeah, these are really super important. Look, didn't the Tigers just sweep the Mariners? The Tigers are those Padres teams of, some of those plucky Andy Green Padres teams that could have a decent September. That's who the Tigers are right now, you know, with some young players that are dangerous. We saw when they played the Marlins and Jake Berger, kept hurting them. That's what they like when they play the Rockies this week. There are guys in every lineup that can hurt you. So it is that kind of time of season where it's kind of fun actually to look at that and go, all right, so where could the Rockies beat the Padres? Where could, I don't think very many places, by the way, but where can the Tigers beat the Padres? Are the Giants a contender? And so it'll be fun, these final series. This is what I think is really cool about having the extra playoff spot, is that more teams get to talk about this.
Right. More teams think that they're contenders. Whether they are or not, we shall see. Sometimes teams slip into the playoffs as a wildcard team and get hot and make the World Series and eliminate the Dodgers. These things happen. Three-game series starting tonight. Matt Waldron versus, for some reason, he's still a Rocky, Cal Quantrill. Tonight, Quantrill's been really good. Former Padre, 7-8, 4.56 ERA. He has done really well against the Padres in his career. He has a 2.7 ERA in four career starts against the Padres, who again made him their top pick in the 2016 draft out of Stanford. Was designated for assignment by the Guardians last offseason. Rockies scooped him up. They have not extended him, but they have not traded him, because that's what the Rockies
do. That is what the Rockies do.
Saturday, we've got Dylan Cease at Kyle Freeland. Kyle Freeland's one of those guys who maybe with the past Padre team, you'd sort of circle him and go, uh-oh, soft-tossing lefty, right?
He's done well recently. Hasn't faced them this year, but did well against them last year. I mean, like, really well.
Right. He had a 2.65 ERA against them in three starts a year ago. Remember last year when they couldn't hit left-handers?
Remember this year when they couldn't.
Yes. It seems like a long time ago, doesn't it? And then Sunday, we've got Musgrove versus Bradley Blaylock. Try saying that name three times fast. 23-year-old rookie, was traded from the Brewers to the Rockies earlier this year. I'll be honest, Kevin, I don't know a whole lot about old Bradley Blaylock.
Well, you'd have to have been following in the minors or watching a game June 20th at Petco Park when he made his major league debut in relief for the Brewers against the Padres. This will be his second start. So you and virtually everybody else doesn't know very much about Bradley Blaylock.
Sure. Can we talk about Brenton Doyle for a minute? Now I'm going to test your knowledge here. When they're playing teams like the Rockies, we were talking about Jake Berger a minute ago, yep. Right? When they're playing the Marlins, Jake Berger's the guy who, like, if the kids are in the room, I go like, hey, look, this is like their one good guy, right? Every time the Padres play the Rockies, I see Brenton Doyle do something amazing. Robbing home runs. I mean, just a good center fielder on a team that really doesn't have, their good players are all old or hurt. To me, he strikes me as somebody who could be a guy for them going forward.
Yeah. I mean, you look at their lineup, Ryan McMahon, Brenton Doyle, Ezekiel Tovar. They're dangerous guys that if you give them pitches, they're in the major leagues and they will hit them. And that's what these guys mean when they say there's major league players over there. Well, right. They don't mean that it's Freddie Freeman over there, right? Whose hot zone is everywhere in the strike zone, basically, just shades of red. It's that these guys can hit your mistakes and they have spots that you need to stay away from. And they identify those. They identified them like they couldn't have stressed that Jake Berger was the, dangerous player and where to stay away from. And look, the guy's hot as heck and, pitchers are human. Brett, it's funny. You say that, like every NL West guy, and especially when you used to play them 19 times in a season, there would be these players that, in my opinion, being watching them those 19 times in person, I was like, man, these guys are really good. And it belied what their overall stats were.
Right.
But they did well against the Padres. They had a good season against the Padres, a good series against the Padres. And you would, you know, people that would watch them play the Brewers wouldn't have that same opinion. Whereas I was like, man, you know, man, I remember the Diamondbacks, Josh Rojas, man.
Your boy.
Yeah. So,
Hey, Brendan Doyle leads the Rockies with 20 home runs, 60 RBIs, and an OPS of almost 800. That's pretty good sea level or elevation for him. Kevin, I don't really want to talk too much more about the Rockies. They're a bad team who the Padres should beat. I would like to talk a little bit, though, before we go, about bullpen usage, getting an easy win on Wednesday, and what happened at the end of Tuesday night in that news conference talking about the Padres bullpen.
What happened? Well, let's set up like what's been going on with the Padres. And I feel like I broke it down pretty well in one of the newsletters where I gave a chart with every game that had been seven games where within the seventh, eighth, ninth inning, at least at some point in the seventh, eighth, ninth inning, the Padres were involved in a game that was within one run. And a lot of times it was tied. And, you know, whether they were leading or trailing, it was really close. And it was requiring, and I say requiring, so this is not on Mike Schilt, it's actually on the offense, requiring the usage of Jason Adam, Tanner Scott, Robert Suarez again and again and again. So that's the reality. To me, it could never enter anybody's thinking that anyone would be questioning Mike Schilt's usage of the bullpen. As a matter of fact, if we were going to look at me, you would see that I've written several times about the man giving a masterclass in bullpen usage. I think that he's been fantastic at it. Now, they've also had some good fortune, but there have been some really tough times where Mike Schilt, Ruben Niebla, Ruben Fritz have navigated through long stretches of games with this bullpen, all of its weaknesses and strengths, requirements for Robert Suarez to be used, and I've documented it and all that. I asked Mike Schilt, I set up the question, and maybe I should have set it up better. Obviously, you wouldn't use these guys if you know you weren't comfortable, if they weren't comfortable. Could you just kind of go through what it is that makes you? Mike has a tendency. Mike lives and breathes these games. He reminds me, he's the first manager I've ever covered that reminds me of an NFL football coach who one game a week is just pouring himself into 3 hours of a football game. And Mike wears it. He's not exactly in the greatest headspace after a game to talk about the game because he's still just living it. It's awesome to see.
Fired up. Yeah.
You work well for the media. It's awesome for Mike and awesome for the Padres. Mike also has had a tendency to be defensive. Mm-hmm. Mike took it, I believe, that I was questioning him. Now, he handled the question well, but I know Mike well enough to know that he took it that I was questioning him. We went back and forth a little bit on me that after months of Mike not answering certain questions and being defensive, misinterpreting when there's been a relationship built. And I say this as a man who's been in the business for 30 years and knows what a relationship is with sources, people that you cover. I got frustrated and, you know, we elevated to a not a huge deal. Wouldn't be a huge deal if it weren't for social media. Would have been a zero anything if it weren't live on, well, I guess it's not television anymore for the Padres. And then I asked a question that, let me just, I'll own it and say that it could have been asked better. I said, wouldn't something to the effect of, wouldn't it be better to have a 5-0 lead? And what I should have said is, how much better would it be for your bullpen to have a big lead going in? Right. Here's the deal. I asked a couple players after the game the exact same question, and they knew what I was saying. I believe Mike knew what I was saying, or I should say maybe in a different moment, Mike would have known what I was saying. My mistake was, and I've done this a dozen other times this year, was not waiting till the press conference was over. And this might not be something that people understand that watch these things and think the only questions that are asked are there, is that I should have waited to ask that on Mike one-on-one as we walked back toward the clubhouse. And I didn't because I wanted to get it. I wasn't, you know. Anyway.
You were on deadline also.
Huh?
Yeah. You were on deadline also.
Well, there are a lot of factors, but the fact is I'm a pro and I, you know, I'm in my, I'm not, I'll use the Mike Schilt line, you know, sometimes I prove my humanness, but that doesn't mean that it was perfect. Like, it doesn't mean I couldn't have done better. I could have. And unlike Mike Schill, because I don't have a constituency of players to answer to, I go ahead and own it publicly that, yeah, absolutely, I could have been better. Absolutely. Here are the reasons that it went down like it did, but absolutely, I could have been better. But this really shouldn't have been a thing. I mean, like, you know, it really shouldn't have been a thing. And whatever.
Can I jump in here? The bullpen had been taxed. The numbers showed that the bullpen had been taxed. This wasn't you saying it. These were the numbers saying.
I get a little frustrated sometimes when people do say things. And most of the time I let it go because I have a saying. I'm not there to win the press conference.
Right.
I'm aware that it's being out live. Sometimes I forget, but I'm aware it's, I don't care. I'm there to serve you, Ryan, my boss, to serve my readers and get the information that I need. And if I don't get it there, I'll get it somewhere else. But I do get frustrated, and I was frustrated in that moment by some things that Mike said, which is it's not any different than what we've done all year. It most certainly was different than what we've done all year. And there were a couple other things that were like, you know, okay, this, can we just get to where we say, yeah, you know what? Our guys are working hard, man. And yeah, but it didn't go that way, and that's okay.
But the following day, what happened, Kevin?
The Padres did exactly what they needed to do. And that was score 8 runs in the first 3 innings and then hold that lead and hold it with their starting pitcher and mid leverage.
Sure. Brian Hoeing.
And Mike Schilt acknowledged, and this really was my point, the 3 high leverage guys were not going to pitch that day.
Right.
And that really was the point of anyone who kind of pays attention and maybe reads along and has knows the history of how these things go. In a season, was that, you know what that meant? That if Scott, Suarez, and Adam were not available that day, if they were in a one-run game again, that it was going to be up to Jeremiah Estrada, Yuki Matsui, Adrian Morahone to close out that game, which obviously they're capable of doing. They've done before, but that's not who is supposed to be doing it for the Padres. And so that's really where we were at. To me, that, again, just, you know, last thing is where I started. I don't know how anyone would think I was questioning Mike Schilt.
Right.
A, he's not the guy not scoring runs. Right. He's trying to win games. B, I started my first question by saying, obviously, you wouldn't do this if you didn't know what you were doing, basically. So there we are. And it's all good.
Also, these things happen over the course of a season, right? You see these guys every day and have seen them practically every day since Valentine's Day, right? Over the course of a season, there's going to be a Tessie exchange and a press scrum. If there wasn't, I'd think something was wrong, right?
You know, the other thing is, and this is not like at all, like, this is just me kind of explaining, because it's something, if people aren't listening, don't normally listen, sometimes we do try to explain things here that, you know, you don't explain in a story or whatever. And a little bit of journalism 101 is like, in response to the idea that the media shouldn't be questioning the team when they're on such a hot streak. Well, is this a playoff team? Because the media's job is to take a 30,000 foot view and be sober in its analysis and to find out what's going on with the team and not be caught flat footed when, oh, wait a minute, what happened? Somebody got hurt or somebody, you know, was overused? Or, hey, well, wait a minute, why is Jeremiah Estrada pitching today? I would be grossly, like, incompetent if I didn't ask some of these questions and also be aware of what was going on. So, like, that's just my job.
And your obligation is to our readers, which, again, I think the people who are listening are probably also reading. And that's sort of, you know, the number one rule of journalism is the people who we answer to are our readers. And I don't know, in watching it, like you said initially, I didn't see, I think if it wasn't televised and if there wasn't social media, nothing would have been made of it, because it was kind of an obvious thing. We've talked about it on this podcast for 2 weeks. Not every game can be game 7 of the World Series. You need an easy one every once in a while because you've got a bullpen that you're trying to protect.
And let's put it back let's put it back. Let's say the next day, Wednesday, had been another one of those one-run games. Right. What would Mike Schilt's answers have been when those three guys weren't available? Well, right. He would have explained how they've been pitching so much.
Right.
That doesn't make anyone wrong. That means that's about addressing reality. That's right. All. That's right. All. I mean, right. But I think sometimes, again, social media has, it's not just social media. Social media has indoctrinated us into all having, you know, we're all living in talk radio, basically. We all have to have instant takes, and somebody has to be right and somebody has to be wrong. And the reality is, no, they don't. I mean, it just happened that way. And so that was one of those instances where I think blame was assigned or something like that. It's like, no, there's not really any blame. It's just, hey, how about, you know what I'd really like to do today? I'd like to explain to the reader why it is that Mike Schilt is cool with this. And look, let's not forget that I've heard a lot of sports and a lot of managers and all that. And I can't think of another one where that exchange would have gone like that. And most of them would have known what it was that I was getting at. As for like Mike and I's relationship, like, I don't think people have been paying attention if they think that, like, you know, it's bad.
You don't get along. Right. Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah. You went to North Carolina. You wrote the longest story we've ever run in the UT sports section on Mike Schilt. There is a trust there, and there is a.
Not to mention, I've known him for, yes. Not to mention, I've known, he trusted me to do that. I've known him for a while now. We talk a lot.
What was the, in 90 seconds or less, Kevin, what was the worst you ever got into it with? And I'm guessing it would be a football coach, right?
If you're only going coaches, I haven't really gotten into them. And I'm not going to make comparisons there, because I have thought back over the last couple of days as a part of my self-assessment of how could I be better in this situation. Mm-hmm. I have thought back to some coaches and things that I've interactions. Generally, you know, whether it's because they're aware that they're being watched or, you know, by the way, I'll stand by my record of being fair. It's probably one of the things that bothers me the most. I'm known far and wide by people that I've covered 99-1 as being one of the most fair journalists that they've ever come across. So when people talk about me in any other light, and I can't help, I'm sorry. I don't care if you have one follower on social media. I can't help it. That like hits me in the heart. So I'd like to think that that has a big part of it. We've talked about probably Mike McCoy, who is the head coach of the Chargers, and it was in his first year, and really, I mean, pushed back both on me and Michael Gelkin quite a bit. I was a columnist, and he pushed back a lot. Well, you know what happened in the end? Over drinks, Mike McCoy, I don't want to mischaracterize it. I wouldn't maybe say outright apologized, but explained some things and took some things back. And, you know, we all live and we all learn. But yeah, the guys, look, I also have to remember this. And I remember this when players get, because I've gotten into some things with some players. I certainly would not like it if someone were watching my every move. Now, oftentimes it feels like they are anyway, but I was succeeding and failing every day in front of 30 to 40,000 people. And then some guy or group of people was asking me for comments about it. And people who've never done what I do, which is an overused argument, but if I were them, this is how I'd be looking at it. Never done what I do. Don't have my talent. Don't have my ability. Haven't worked like I have. Haven't overcome the challenges I have. Is constantly asking me about it. And that would you couldn't help but have that, the constant questions feel like criticism. I try to always remember that, is that like what we might call thin skin. Let me tell you, as someone who takes a fair amount of absolutely, now I take constructive criticism and there are things I do wrong, but I take an awful lot of bogus criticism on social media. So I can speak to this, like, it freaking sucks.
Right.
And players get it a lot. And managers, my goodness, baseball managers, we all could do their job.
Sure.
So I absolutely get it, man.
Right. I love it. One of the best parts about this podcast, Kevin, is that we can pull the curtain back every once in a while, talk about some things, give people some insight. And so I appreciate you for diving into that with me here. We've gone a little bit over today, so I do think we have to go. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. Padres-Rockies 3-game series starting tonight. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.